CE Pro Magazine is your source for the latest trends in custom electronics and is dedicated to helping dealers stay current on products, understand technology, and run their business profitably. Visit CEPro.com for the latest industry trends and to subscribe to the leading custom electronics magazine.
This is PodTech.net at the CEA Industry Forum at San Francisco's Fairmont Hotel. Five burning questions in the CE industry. That was the topic of the final panel of the day on October 17th, presented by Steve Koenig, Senior Manager, Industry Analysis with CEA, and Joseph Bates, Director of Research with CEA. Their presentation combined quick audience surveys with videotaped consumer surveys, then analyzed the survey findings in terms of current CEA research. This PodTech.net podcast brings you the answers to these five burning questions. What are the implications of shifting sales channels and retail models? Which content distribution models will prevail? Will wireless media services resonate with consumers? Do consumers care about emerging broadband services? And finally, do consumers care about consumer electronics recycling?
So once again, welcome to the session, Inquiring Minds Want to Know, Five Burning Questions in the CE Industry. My name is Steve Koenig, and I'm the Senior Manager of Industry Analysis at CEA.
And I am Joe Bates. I'm the Director of Research at CEA.
And in this age of rapid product and service innovation, it often appears that a number of new questions are generated that really greatly exceed the pace of answers. Consumers and industry executives alike wrestle almost daily with questions of picking the right technology, convergence, product integration, obsolescence, and the list goes on. This session is really going to focus on five key burning questions in our industry, and Joe and I will attempt to uncover the answers to these questions really through the lens of CEA research and utilizing CEA's extensive body of research and expertise in the CE industry. And along the way, we'll include insightful, if not a little sobering, video interviews with consumers that buy your products. And as an added bonus, we're also going to be engaging you all to convey your opinion to these questions through our audience poll device, such as Joe is demonstrating here.
Let's talk about those burning questions. The five questions. Number one, what are the implications of shifting sales channels and retail models? So, for instance, what impact will Walmart have and other non-traditional outlets such as Costco, QVC, and even online shopping and retailing? Will tech services be impacted by Best Buy's Geek Squad and the recently announced Circuit City Fire Dog? Will it help or hinder the market for custom installation? And do company stores like Apple and Sony, are they going to confuse the retail sales channel in terms of the consumers or not and help the retail channel? Number two, which content distribution models will prevail? So digital downloads or physical CDs and DVDs? What do consumers want to have? Buying content or renting content? Do they want to have it on their shelf or do they want to send it back? How about iTunes and the iPod? Is that going to continue to dominate the market or will other devices come in? Question number three, will wireless media services resonate with consumers? What I mean by that are things such as social networking, location-based services, mobile television, even digital audio and video, photos, things of that nature, and the roaming internet as well. The fourth question is, do consumers care about emerging broadband services? So IPTV, voice over internet protocol, movie downloads, WiMAX, things of that nature. Do they care? And finally, we'll address consumers and their thoughts about CE recycling, consumer electronics recycling. So do they care about that? And if so, how is that going to work best for the consumer and make the program the most successful? So these are our five questions. So the first question, what are the implications of the shifting sales channels and retail models? And the first thing we'd like to do is hear from our consumers. We ask them, where do they currently buy their consumer electronics products? What types of stores? And why are they buying there, or what might make them switch?
Yeah, let's take a look at some of the body of research that we have at CEA that I think will support and augment what we've heard straight from the consumer's mouth. Here we're looking at, based on all U.S. online households, where are these households shopping for consumer electronics products? And as you heard every one of our consumer voices say, Best Buy, Circuit City, general electronics stores. But they're also going to mass merchants. They're going to warehouse clubs like Sam's, Costco, department stores. We heard Sears mentioned. But they're also going online, and they're also, to perhaps a slightly lesser degree, going to specialty stores. Now again, looking at all U.S. online households, what are some of the reasons that they shop? And we heard some of these reasons come through the consumer voices. Top in the list, it's probably a no-brainer, it's price, but also location, availability of products, selection, assortment. But you might be surprised to see past experience. Raylene was talking about how she got a bad taste in her mouth and she would just walk away because a lot of places match products. Quality of products and return policies also kind of come into the picture for reasons that consumers shop where they do. Shifting methods of research. Here we just really want to underscore the growing importance of online. Maybe about 10 or 15 years ago, and even farther back, when people were researching products, typically they were using the Yellow Pages, a phone, and maybe a catalog. Nowadays, you can bank on that they're going to go online, and not only can they get extensive information about the products, they can find out where they're sold, if it's in stock, and who's got the best price. So we just wanted to share some of these statistics related to online research methods and shopping methods with you that have come, again, from the extensive body of research that we have at CEA. And down at the bottom of the list, you'll also see that over half of consumers are talking to people that they know and asking them about different products, services, price, where can I get the best deal on this, what have you heard? So what are some other online research sources? Well, it's really no surprise that most people are going to retailer websites like Best Buy or Circuit City. They already have the store in mind that they're going to buy, and so they're going to check out if it's in stock and what's the price. Is there a rebate associated with that so I can get an even better deal? They're also going to the manufacturer site. Even though the Best Buys and Circuit Cities of the world are doing a pretty good job these days with conveying a lot of product information, sometimes they need to go to the manufacturer's site to get more complete data. Also coming into the picture are professional reviews, and this is something that has crept into, I think, the process for a lot of consumers in recent years, really relying on the professional review to help them make a more informed decision. And while we haven't done a lot of surveying on this topic, also user-oriented reviews, people that have actually bought it and said, hey, I give it 5 stars, I love this product, or I give it 1 star, it was a dog, this thing didn't do what it was supposed to do. So you see a lot of that coming into play as well. Also, even sites like eBay can be sources for people when they're shopping for consumer electronics products. So how about looking towards the future? This is kind of getting towards the answer to this burning question of shifting sales channels. Where are people really planning to buy in the future? What the future portends, according to these online households in the U.S., that still we can expect people to primarily shop for CE products at general consumer electronics stores like Best Buy and Circuit City. They're going to be going to mass merchants and clubs too, but as you look through these numbers, you'll notice that the only one that has a net gain is online. So really, again, underscoring the importance of e-commerce in our industry as a sales channel and for research and just general shopping.
Now that you've seen a little bit of the data, we'd like to ask you all a question. And that is, if you were planning to buy a new MP3 player, where would you go first, or where would you go to buy it? Okay, so interesting results. 29% say general electronics store, but 25% say the Apple store. So that's very interesting. And of course, online, I'm not surprised by that because of the data we've shown. So, interesting.
Well, Steve? They are interesting results, and it's interesting that 25% of you said the Apple store, a brand store, and I'm going to touch on that in just a second.
All right, so Steve, can you finally answer the burning question for us?
Let's do it. So here's the answer to the question about shifting sales channels from CEA's perspective. Again, we saw in that likelihood of future shopping, we can expect that general electronic stores like Circuit City and Best Buy and mass merchants like Walmart and Target will probably be the primary sales channels for CE in the near term and for the foreseeable future. But don't get clubbed is the point, also another point that we want to make. I think there's a lot of concern that Walmart is going to come in and kill the category. Actually, we should probably be looking at the likes of Costco and Sam's. And if you've been paying attention to some of the news coming out of Costco lately, they talk about how a large section of their shoppers are actually white-collar households that are earning six-figure incomes. It's not all blue-collar, lower-income families that are buying the two-liter jars of mayonnaise. They're coming in for flat-panel TVs, for AV receivers, and things of that nature. iPods, digital cameras, camcorders, you name it. Again, we want to stress the importance of e-commerce moving forward in our industry as a sales channel and for research. And to touch on the brand stores, our perspective is that these are showcase outlets and really not designed for selling. I don't think that profit is the real motive here. I think more importantly, it's to showcase the products in a controlled environment where they're staffed by employees that know exactly what they're talking about because that all they sell is one brand. And so they know it backwards and forward. And unfortunately, it's kind of come to this in our industry where the sales reps on the floor at Circuit City and Best Buy, for better or worse, some of them don't have all the information or they can't communicate effectively. So some of the premier brands, if you will, in our industry have really resulted to taking this approach of a dedicated sales channel. And the reason we say also no sale is that they have to be careful to not introduce channel conflicts. So you probably can be guaranteed you're not going to get the best price at the Apple store. You may find it somewhere else. Again, that's why I say it's really not, the motive isn't profit here. They want to be very careful about not undercutting their existing channels. Service is also a huge factor moving forward in our industry. It's a key competitive platform. Witness FireDog and Geek Squad, but also more consultative selling. And that's where we come to the final point, where really we see kind of, not necessarily a polarization, but definitely two major groups of consumers in our industry that are shopping and buying our products. The shop and go customer who knows exactly what they want, they know what they're looking for, they're gonna come in and they wanna get it and get out. And we've probably all been there for certain products that we're buying. We've done our homework, we're gonna come in and we're gonna buy it and we're gonna leave. We're not really there to shop around and ask about products. On the other hand, there are other consumers who really need a more consultative approach. They're not sure, maybe they're not comfortable just browsing around the internet, maybe they're not that internet savvy. They wanna come in and actually talk to a human being. As John mentioned in the Consumer Voices, you know, it's nice when they actually pick up the phone when you call. Getting to that service component. So consultative selling. Think about Magnolia Hi-Fi inside Best Buy. Clearly that's not a shop and go proposition. That's a consultative sales approach, and that's going to be increasingly important.
So Steve, how about that question, the Geek Squad and FireDog, are they going to help the channel? Are they going to help custom installers, or are they going to hurt them?
Well, it's common knowledge that margins are shrinking on a quarterly basis, if not monthly basis. So yeah, services are hugely important, and wherever possible, step one is probably to bolt on, upsell the customer, bolt on accessories where appropriate, but also moving forward will be services, especially where higher big ticket items are concerned, like plasma TVs. Sell them on the installation, and that's where the margin's gonna be.
All right, thanks Steve. So let's go on to question number two. Which content distribution models will prevail? And again, I'm going to throw it back over to Steve here.
Thanks, Joe. Again, we're going to start off with some more CEA research. And here we want to just kind of set the stage. Some of you may not be aware, but when you're talking about portable entertainment content, or what we kind of call handheld content, looking at online adults who own a portable entertainment device, at CEA, on this topic, we've tried to include all kinds of devices instead of limiting it to just one. So what we mean by a portable entertainment device is really anything from a wireless handset to a laptop. But most of this content that's used on these devices is used at home, and that may surprise some of you. The other places, you know, in the car, at work, on business trips, hopefully you guys aren't using entertainment content right now, but at the gym and at school as well. So that just kind of gives you a flavor for that. But where are they getting this content? And this is another fact that might surprise you. The vast majority of this content is coming from physical media. It's not coming from electronic downloads. We see a good bit of content coming through wireless handsets. Also, you can see respectable numbers, though, for digital content. And what we'll come to a little bit later on in the conclusion is kind of comparing and contrasting purchasing versus usage. That'll be a key point. Radio and also satellite broadcasts. Okay, well, let's again turn to some of the CEA research that we've done. And what we're looking here is online household preferences for how they would like to procure content moving forward. And if you look here, we have this segmented by adopter segment, early adopters, the mass adopters, the laggards, and then an overall summary. And as you can see, where music is concerned, most people are thinking CD, and a good number are thinking electronic download. But how about for video? We see a similar picture here. People are still really attached to the physical media. They like to hold it. Like Raylene said, I like to stick it on my shelf and display it and show it. And we've gone a step further at CEA to try to uncover and unearth why is this. Consumers tell us, whether you're talking about CDs or DVDs, that there's really an immediacy to this physical media. There's a fear that pervades the consumer consciousness in losing electronic information. All of us have had issues with viruses or our hardware issues where we've had a crashed hard drive and we've lost all our data. There's a fear out there among consumers that that might happen to them if they click over to nothing but electronic. Also, they just like shopping in person. They like browsing around and picking up CDs and DVDs and looking at them and checking it out while they're out at the stores. And as Raylene said, some of them just simply like to display it. That's kind of an impossibility when you have 10,000 songs on a hard drive. You can say, see my library? Great. Now we want to kind of touch on the issue of owning the content or leasing it or renting it. We asked online adults who, again, own a portable entertainment device what if they're subscribing to any content services. Now, this could be physical media like Netflix, or it could be electronic like Napster or Rhapsody. And as you can see from this pretty simple pie chart, that only a small percentage of these online adults really are subscribing to these services. So does that mean that the opportunity set here for subscription content services is limited? We'll see.
Let's go to the audience poll. Would you prefer to download a single song for $1, or would you prefer to purchase an entire CD for $15? All right, so 54% would, well, the bars are a little off there, but look at the numbers instead. So 54%, it's almost a split decision. So I think this group is a little bit more tech savvy and interested in downloading than having the CD. I noticed that there aren't too many teenagers here in the crowd today either, and we definitely have seen in our data much higher propensity for younger consumers to prefer downloading versus purchasing the entire CD. So I would say that you all are at least very young at heart.
For the foreseeable future, in terms of procurement of content, we can expect video and audio content to largely exist in the physical domain. And so we kind of illustrate this with a couple of continuums here. And you can see where the needle is pointing to for video and music. Video is still very much in the physical domain, and only thanks to iTunes with some of the lost episodes and even services like MovieLink do we even have electronic video. But in terms of usage, it's a quite different picture. So the point we want to make here is that procurement will probably largely remain physical media in the physical domain, but usage will be much more shifted towards the electronic side. Think about all those people that are filling up their iPods with their existing catalog of CDs. What they're doing, they're going out and they're buying the CD, but then they're ripping it to their iPod. So we would expect that type of a process to continue, at least for the foreseeable future. How long will it take before the mass market really fully adopts and embraces 100% pure electronic downloading of content? Probably it's going to take a generation for that to happen, simply because the vast majority of us have legacy issues with all of our content, and we're not going to be content to put it all on one device, and a lot of consumers are, again, afraid about losing it or something like that. So it may take a very long time before a lot of us are foregoing the aisle at Best Buy to buy our CD and going to iTunes.com.
Now, Steve, what about any other services that come out? I mean, is Apple and the iPod, is that going to dominate? Is that going to remain, you know, the 800-pound gorilla?
Well, we're already seeing a lot of different companies challenging, not the least of which is Microsoft with their forthcoming Zune player. In fact, they've created this whole ecosystem just like Apple has. And unfortunately, with a lot of the content, the digital rights management issues, the content community has really mandated that this electronic content be shackled and held hostage almost. So we see these closed walled garden, these ecosystem is another word you'll hear used to describe this. And until we can convince the content community, kind of like Mark Cuban was saying earlier in his one-on-one session, to open up and let the content be free, liberate it, we're probably going to see more of these winner-take-all strategies, these silos of content gardens, if you will, that are going to exist, whether it's Microsoft, Apple, or some other company.
Now, let's move on to the next question. Question three, will wireless media services resonate with consumers? So, Steve, again, I need some help here. Can you bring some data to this?
Let's bring on the data. Again, at CEA, we've tried to use as broad a scope as possible when we're looking at content usage in the on-the-go arena. So we really don't have any device-specific, talking about wireless handset usage with these. So again, we're going to be talking more in the realm of the broader realm of portable entertainment devices, and we'll show a little data on that. But again, it can be anything from a handset down to a laptop. But what are consumers doing with this content? Well, music is predominant. There's a lot of email, accessing the internet, browsing around, Googling things. There's some gaming, instant messaging, some of the alternate modes of communication, texting, instant messaging, email. We see a little bit of watching video. But what are they using? Well, you can see it's kind of a toss-up between laptops and wireless handsets. And we do see MP3 players creeping into there in the fourth position at 24%. But you can bank on that this is going to increase if we were to conduct this particular survey again, say next year, we'll probably see portable MP3 player continue to climb because a lot of them are supporting video these days. And CEA is actually forecasting that this year alone, the industry will ship 33 million MP3 players, and a good chunk of that are going to be video enabled. Beyond that, we see a limited engagement with portable gaming devices like PSPs, Game Boys. So how about interest in content services? Now, in this question, we are really asking online adults who do not already subscribe to an entertainment content service, how interested are they in subscribing? Now, again, this could be something like Netflix, or it could be Napster. It could be something like Verizon VCast as well. So again, not really pinpointing on wireless media services, but it gives us a clue as to what the answer might be. And as you can see, only about 26%, about one in four, are really even interested. And as most of you know, interest doesn't always convey to actual purchase. So the actual number, that percentage that might really subscribe to some of these services despite their interest, is even lower.
So within the mix here of our consumers, they mentioned quite a few features that there might not be additional cost for them once you have the phone, but there are also some things that these consumers would like to do, such as watching TV, listening to the radio, that maybe could lend to premium pricing as well. So, okay, Steve, let's look at some more data.
And when we looked at usage of different types of activities moving forward on portable entertainment devices, again, handsets to laptops. Really, we see a big interest in browsing the internet and listening to music, either it's, again, physical content. Biggest gainers are down in TV programming. We heard that from our consumer voices. Gaming is pretty flat, but music and digital file formats. It's probably no wonder that Apple is ramping up their iPhone as we speak.
When will a majority of consumers subscribe to wireless entertainment services? Steve, can you answer the question for us?
Let's do that. And I think what we can agree on is, yeah, it's gonna take a while for the mass market to adopt a lot of these services, but they're gonna be pushed by the carriers like Verizon and Sprint. But certainly we can all agree also that the seeds have been planted for engagement with digital content. And in fact, these services are already in the hands of early adopters. When you think about products like Verizon's VCast, Sprint TV, Singular's MediaNet, these services are already out there, and carriers are vigorously ramping up the services that are on the deck, as they call it, on the handset. And I mentioned the push strategy there. They're very vigorously pushing these handsets out into the marketplace because it's incumbent upon them to have as many handsets in the install base that can take advantage of these services. Because right now in the carrier world, it's not about your airtime, it's your engagement with these services. That's the way moving forward that they're going to be able to increase their average revenue per user, or their ARPU, as they like to say. But I would agree with the audience in the polling that it's going to take a while for the vast majority of consumers to embrace these services, certainly to a large extent. And that's why we say that for the foreseeable future, in the installed base of handsets, which again, penetration is pushing 85% right now, capability is really going to outstrip usage. So a lot of people will have handsets that are capable of digital audio playback, video, and a lot of these other TV maybe and whiz-bang features, but a smaller number, a subset, are going to be actually using them. But in that 3, 5, maybe even 10-year time frame, let's not forget the power of presence of the handset. Like any other device, or unlike any other device that we carry, we always have our phone. As Joe mentioned in our consumer voices, I don't lose my phone. So consider the power of presence and also the personalization that we're seeing with these devices and consumers' attachment to them. We all have handsets and we don't go anywhere without them. And when you think about the possibilities of social networking, of all the user-generated content, like mobile YouTube or mobile MySpace, location-based services for point of interest, and even GPS navigation, the handset becomes a pretty compelling device. So I think it's going to take a while for these services to penetrate the mass market, but it's already in the hands of early adopters, and as the word gets out, more and more people are going to say, I want that.
Yep. All right, so let's go on to the next question.
Okay, let's do it. The question here is, do consumers care about emerging broadband services? Okay, Joe, so what does some of the CEA research tell us about the answer to this question?
All right, well, we asked in a quantitative survey what activities consumers are currently doing using their internet connection. So you see that in the red bar. And we asked them, what would you like to be doing in the future? So email, as you heard our consumers tell us, is about predominantly what people are doing. They are all doing that, no surprise, 95%. Browsing the internet, looking for information. Again, these are all the things that our consumers told us. And buying things, shopping. So all of those have a vast majority who are doing them now. And interestingly, we see fewer people indicating they would like to do that or continue doing that in the future. So maybe a little less time spent doing those activities. Now, if we get down to the bottom of this list, we see internet radio and streaming audio, and about 1/3 of these online households are currently doing that, but yet more than 42% would like to do that in the future. Download audio and music files, about 31% right now, and in the future, 42%. Now, the next slide really, I think, helps us understand where things might go. Right now, only 1/4 of consumers who are online households are watching video content using their internet connection. 16% are downloading video files, and even smaller numbers are doing these other activities such as telecommuting, internet telephone, watching TV shows, and downloading movies or TV shows. But look at that interest in the future, much, much higher than the current usage and the current activities. So we see that there is definitely some potential here for these online services.
Looks like they're thinking Web 2.0.
Yeah, exactly. Now, because they want to do some of these more advanced activities, they're going to need to have products on which to do those. So here we ask consumers, what products do you currently have connected to the internet, and which ones would you like to connect going forward? So no surprise that the desktop PC and the laptop PC are the top two, and of course the desktop rules right now in terms of the currently connected. And we would expect that as laptops are increasing their penetration, as they are, we will see a switch over, especially when people begin to replace their desktops with the laptop computers. So we do see that less usage or less interest in having their desktop connected to the internet in the future, and more interest in the laptop PC. But we also see much, much higher interest in having the television connected to the internet, having a digital video recorder, a media server, even security systems and appliances is more than what it is now.
We'd like you to tell us when you think a majority of U.S. households will subscribe to voice over IP.
All right, well, I think we have some data here that we look at. And because CEA does not track or estimate generally service adoption, we're going to look at some information that others are providing right now. This comes from New Paradigm Resources, and they estimate that in terms of millions of U.S. households, by 2009, we're going to see 24 million. Now, there's currently about 111 million households, so that would be less than a quarter. So even though we see these very healthy and very good growth rates for voice over IP, it is going to take some time before a majority of consumers subscribe to these services. And what about IPTV? Well, again, we look to another estimate, and this is from ABI Research. And these, of course, are millions of worldwide households. Now, we think that the majority of these numbers will come from U.S. households, even though there is strong interest, for instance, in Asia with this type of service. Nonetheless, again, looking at the 2010 worldwide, we see only 35 million. So even if all of those were in the U.S., that's only about 30% of U.S. households. So again, we're not going to reach a majority within the foreseeable future, in the next 5 years. Maybe in the next 10 years we will, but it's going to take some time if it does occur. To give you the final answer to this question, consumers do care about broadband services, especially telephone, movies, and TV. They do want to do those more in the future than they're currently doing now. And because of that, they do want to connect more CE products to the internet in order to realize their desires. So let's jump through question five very quickly, since only a few of you really are interested in this question. Do consumers care about CE recycling, and how will it work? Well, I'd like to put in this into context first. What are consumers thinking is the biggest problem facing the U.S.? And we see that trash going into landfills is quite high on the list. Consumers could only select one of these items. So we also see hazardous chemical wastes, radioactive waste, and household product recycling such as newspapers, cans, and plastic bottles and such like that. CE recycling, only 6% of consumers think that's the biggest problem facing the U.S. So again, it's not a top-of-mind issue. It's not on the forefront of their minds. However, when we ask consumers specifically how important is recycling consumer electronics products, we actually see that three-quarters of consumers say, yes, this is important, and that's pretty good. You know, I think especially when you look at it in terms of compared to the household trash, we've, you know, been recycling household trash for 20 years now. We've pounded it into the brains of the consumers that is a very important thing to do. So the idea of recycling is bleeding over from that into other areas, and even household appliances. Consumers are saying, yes, we need to recycle these items. So we're going to skip over the consumer voices on this one. What's the preferred recycling method? How will this work? Well, consumers say that leaving it in a trash bin. And what we found from our consumers is that it needs to be convenient. So leaving it in a trash bin at the curb, and again, we have pounded it into people's brains to do that or to put it in a designated recycling bin if they're living in an apartment. So it's no surprise that they would want to be able to recycle electronics products in that same way. And we also see a healthy number there, 28% would like to take it to a designated recycling facility. Let's skip ahead here to the conclusion. And of course, it is CE recycling is not top of mind for consumers. They're not thinking of it on a day-to-day basis. However, when prompted, they do say it's important. So, and they also are telling us that it needs to be convenient. If it's going to work, it's got to be convenient. And of course, the problem here, or the paradox, or whatever you want to call it, the challenge, consumers don't want to pay for it. I think the real takeaway from that is that, and we found this in our research, is that consumers don't want to know they're paying for it. That's the key. People think it's important, and they think it should be done, but they just don't want to know that they're going to have to pay for it.
Ignorance is bliss.
You just heard the research on 5 burning questions in the consumer electronics industry, presented by Steve Koenig, Senior Manager, Industry Analysis with CEA, and Joseph Bates, CEA's Director of Research. This panel was recorded at the CEA Industry Forum, held at San Francisco's Fairmont Hotel, October 17, 2006. You're listening to podtech.net.
This podcast is brought to you by CE Pro Magazine, the leading magazine in the business of custom electronics.